On today's episode of the Trial Run Podcast, the NBA season is back. The Nationals have taken a commanding 2-0 lead in the World Series. The Patriots get Mohamed Sanu. Is Tom Brady leaving New England? And lots of interesting stuff in the college football universe. All of that and more on today's episode of the Trial Run Podcast. So let's go.
We begin after the summer side.
Our special thanks to the best in the business, Hunter Tarolsky and Ben Zeitler, for filling in for me last week. But I'm back, baby, and I'm back with some fire because I got takes spewing all over the place tonight. And I am fresh off of one of my favorite events of the entire year today. Tonight, we're actually recording this podcast very late because we just got back from my first high school football game of the year. And it was a good one, the number one team in the state in Division II being upset by our boy Ben Zeitler's old high school, Midland Dow. Very interesting game. And Brennan, I want to see your take on what it's like going to watch a high school football game for the first time in God knows how long and seeing all the pageantry and everything that we got to see tonight, you know, for the first time in a while, like I said.
Well, first of all, I'd just like the fans at home to note the fear in Nate's voice when he talked about Ben and Hunter and how they performed magnificently on this podcast.
Oh, they really did. Hunter brought it. Ben did what he had to do. He was basically the straight man, and Hunter was the, you know, the clown in the background. So I appreciate them doing what they did.
And then as it comes to high school football, I don't know what you're talking about because I've already been to two high school football games aside from the one that we had tonight.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. You haven't turned the page yet.
I have not turned the page. I've been a diehard East fan, rolling the ears, saw the boys in action. We're going to be a playoff contending team. Might frick around and win a state championship this year.
Yeah, I highly doubt that. Do you want to remind the folks at home how your high school football career ended?
Absolutely not. All I know is that we were 9-0 conference champs.
All right, well, you know, lost in the first round of the playoffs, but I'll just let that sit there for a while. The National Basketball Association is back and better than ever, Brennan Bevins. And I tell you what, we got to see a couple of great games the last couple of days. Pistons opened the season on a back-to-back, 1-1, lost one. Looked great in the first game against the Pacers. Not so great against the Atlanta Hawks. The new season begins, new storylines, new sagas. What is the thing that you're looking out for the most as we go into this new NBA season, just considering everything that has shifted? The entire power dynamic and power structure of the league has shifted. It's evened out, if you ask me, to the point where we have a lot of teams that are contending. But still, at the very top, we have teams like the Lakers, Clippers, Bucks, Rockets. If you want to throw the Warriors in there, although they didn't look great last night against the Clippers, what is your favorite storyline that we've seen this early in the season?
I think you kind of hit the nail on the head with the power dynamic shifting. I think the big storyline this season will be who is the team, if there even is a team, that comes out and replaces the Warriors as that head dog in the NBA. I'm looking forward to seeing who that is. We could definitely see it be one of those Los Angeles teams and the Clippers and the Lakers. But, you know, we could maybe see a team from the East pull up and, you know, make some scenes that the East has not made in the past. So it'll be exciting to see looking forward. We all know that, of course, the Pistons are going to be that team.
Stones.
I'm playing devil's advocate for the folks at home.
Yeah, of course, as you would. And, we saw the Warriors play last night. We saw them get absolutely decimated by the Clippers. That team definitely looks like they are as advertised, especially on the defensive end of the floor.
Which I called, by the way, and you were very skeptical of this summer.
Yeah, you have written down on our show sheet, I don't want to say I told you so.
Which is facts.
Beneath the header of thoughts on the Warriors from the first game.
I don't remember my exact verbiage, but I invite everyone to go back to the summer special podcast we had and just listen to our discussion about the Warriors. I clearly said that the Warriors were going to be fall off the map and that they might not even make the Western Conference Finals. That was my claim. Nate wholeheartedly disagreed, and here we are, and they don't even look like they're a playoff team.
Can we settle down? We're two games into the season. Can we settle down, please?
I'm just saying
they're only one game, and that was our first game.
They're playing a lot of young Bucks, and it doesn't look like their all-stars are picking up the slack from Klay Thompson and KD. So,
Brennan, we are one game into the season. Curry didn't play great. He had 8 or 9 turnovers last night. Their young players are going to develop. D'Angelo Russell and Steph Curry are going to develop a chemistry. It's going to work better than you think it's going to work, but they played a fantastic Clippers team in the first game, so I'm going to give them a pass on that first
one. They'll make the playoffs, sure, but
Did you not just say they wouldn't?
I said, I remember in the summer.
You also have on the sheet, do they have any chance?
I said, do they have any chance? And what I mean by that is to win it all.
Immediately below that, you have, could they miss the playoffs?
I think,
I'm not letting you slide on this
one. I think
one.
They could. And another claim I made this summer that you disagreed with is that the Warriors dynasty, as we know it, is over. And that I don't think there's any doubt about.
I think as we know it, the Warriors dynasty is over. Given that when you take it from this perspective, that as we know it, you know, Kevin Durant was a part of the team as we knew it. Harrison Barnes earlier.
True, but the Warriors dynasty started before Kevin Durant was.
That's what I'm saying. With players like Harrison Barnes, Andrew Bogut, you know, all those dudes, they're obviously not there anymore. So in that way, it's definitely not the way, you know, we've seen it in the past. And they're playing with a very, very, very young lineup. We saw that last year. They gave both of their rookies a ton of minutes last night in Jordan Poole. And who's the other one? Eric Pascal.
Yeah,
he was the second one. They gave their guys a lot of minutes, a lot of people who don't play a lot. Kevon Looney is still injured a little bit, so he didn't play a whole lot. He's a big part of what they do. D'Angelo Russell and Steph Curry can only do so much. So,
do you think they're missing a guy like Sean Livingston?
I think it's very clear that they're missing...
from the veterans,
they are missing the veteran presence, and they're missing guys coming off their bench that you know what they're going to bring to the table.
Right.
I think Steve Kerr is going to take a little bit of time to figure everything out. There's going to be a learning curve to these new guys for sure. When you lose two guys like Sean Livingston and Andre Iguodala, who are no longer on the roster, I mean, that's going to sting a little bit because those are guys that I would almost argue are as much of a part of the dynasty as guys like Klay Thompson and Steph Curry have been.
That's a fair statement. I know for sure Sean Livingston was my favorite Warrior during that time. So,
not Klay Thompson.
Klay Thompson is definitely.
Klay Thompson is right up there for like top five of my favorite humans of all time.
He's a solid number two of my favorite Warriors, but it's Sean Livingston. He was a pretty awesome
Curry.
Guy. Yeah, no, I'm sorry.
Corny.
I do respect Curry. I will say that much on his behalf. I respect his game.
You don't respect him as a person.
I just don't like him. I don't know.
I'm trying to bait you into this right now. I want to have the Curry debate. Are the Lakers and Clippers, they run in the West right now? I mean, we've seen
like
what they
I did. Mentioned. Yeah, I mean, it's a significant.
Clippers specifically.
It's going to be a very interesting dynamic down the season to see who's going to control Los Angeles. And you got two really good teams. It seems that LeBron is able to pull together some sort of super team every single year. He's got some solid pieces around him, and then obviously with the Clippers, you've got Kawhi and PG and Patrick.
And
Beverly.
they're looking the way that they're looking right now without Paul George playing. And
right,
people are not even really taking that into consideration at the present moment.
Both teams are just loaded with talent. It's going to be really interesting to see how that moves forward. We're going to see if, you know, the debate has been going on recently in the NBA if Kawhi has surpassed LeBron at least at this point for the best player in the NBA. So, while we do have the macro level of those two teams going head-to-head, we also have that Kawhi-LeBron dynamic, see who's going to come out on top.
Our boy Ben Zeitler made a very good point last night, too, when watching Kawhi and the Clippers play. Kawhi just does not look like the guy who, body-wise, he does, but in his style of play, he does not look like the guy who you'd point to and say, wow, that guy is, you know, outstanding in a way that he's better than everybody else in the entire league. But when he goes about his business, puts up the numbers that he puts up, and does everything so surgically, I think he absolutely has to be in that discussion. And that's part of the reason why I think the Clippers are very, very clearly the best team in the league right now, and I don't even really think it's that close.
No, I think at least at the moment the Clippers have the edge.
And they're only going to get better.
I would say Kawhi is a top three player all time in terms of all-around play.
Top three?
In all-around play. I'm talking offense, defense, the whole package. Think of what the man's done. He single-handedly ended the Warriors and the Heat dynasties.
And the Spurs.
Yes.
And the Spurs, by leaving. And he ended what potentially could have been a Raptors dynasty, but that's neither here nor there.
Dynasty in the making, perhaps.
People don't really give him the credit that he deserves in a lot of fronts. He basically... in my opinion, at least, he restored power to he restored the power dynamic to what it needs to be in the NBA single-handedly, I might add.
This past season, yeah, this season, I mean, obviously it's still early, so we don't really know how it's all going to shake out, but from the looks of it, this season has the makings to be the best NBA season we've seen in recent memory, simply because those super teams have been broken up a little bit more. We've got, you know, solid teams from both the East and the West and all spread throughout the two conferences that just look like they could all contend, and it's going to be really interesting to see how it shapes up.
Yeah, and you just mentioned it. There are better teams in both conferences, but do you really believe that the strength of each conference is more balanced than it has been in years past? Do you think that to be the truth? Because I personally don't.
There's stronger power in the West, but I think it's more balanced than it has been in recent memory, at least.
See, I really don't think – I think the West right now is 10 teams deep, and I think any of those 10 teams could probably beat the top 6 or 7 teams in the East in a 7-game series, if you ask me. The only team that we know really what we're going to get from is probably the Milwaukee Bucks. Outside of that, there's question marks with the Celtics, Kemba Walker. How good is that team going to be? There's questions with the 76ers. We're still waiting for Ben Simmons to develop. Joel Embiid has a history of injuries. He is a great player, but, you know, everybody, I don't know if everybody's sold on the dog inside of him on what he can do. You know, in crunch time, we saw him not necessarily fold, but we saw the 76ers wilt a little bit under pressure last year. And then outside of that, it's kind of a crapshoot between everybody else in the East. The Raptors are definitely not going to be what they were last year, probably still be a playoff team. Out West, then you have teams like the, you know, Lakers, Clippers, Rockets, Warriors, Nuggets, Jazz, all of those teams. That's 5 teams I just named off the top that I think could beat any of those top 7 teams in the East. So I actually don't think that the balance of power between the two conferences has been restored at all. I just think that just throughout the entire league, there's more teams with chances to win, but I don't think necessarily it's equally divided between East and West.
I think the Bucks are going to progress along that path towards being an elite team, and then I think the 76ers are going to be another team that take a big step this year. They've got some solid pieces around their stars. And if Ben Simmons can develop a 3-point shot, it's over for the East and, frankly, for a good number of teams in the West.
That's a huge if, though.
That's true. And then the addition of my boy Trey Burke, you already know that's going to play a significant role in there. Had to shout him out. Celtics, I think that you can't get much worse of a result than you had last year with all the high expectations that they had. So I think that they'll at least improve. And then everyone wants to count out the Raptors. But if you really look at, you know, who they lost, they did lose Kawhi, huge. They lost Danny Green, which is big but not gigantic. And then other than that, they really have all of their pieces from a championship team who beat the Warriors. So I'm not ready to write them off. I still think that they can contend and, you know, give a lot of teams within the rest in the West a run for their money if it came down to it.
If I set the over-under for Ben Simmons' threes at 10.5, would you take the over or the
this
under?
This year?
For the season.
Yeah, no, I would.
You take the over or the
I
under?
I take the over.
You take the over on 10.5?
Yeah, I would.
Oh, man. This is the...
I really do. I think he's going to...
You think he's going to... Because this is one of those things where if it happens, it's going to happen. Like, it's going to be... He's not just going to shoot a couple of them. He's going to start shooting them regularly, and 10.5 is obviously not an astronomical number. But I think if he gets discouraged early in the season, then I think he's going to kind of shy away from it as we go on. So this is a little tough for me. Just because you took the over, I'm going to take the under just so we can see, you know, 82 games from now who was right and who was wrong.
Yeah, we'll see.
We've talked a lot about the power balance in the East. We talked about the Stones playing the 2 games on a back-to-back. I'm going to give them a pass for that Hawks game coming on the second day of a back-to-back. How are they looking this year? Do we give them any chance in the East? What are the potential playoff seedings that we're looking at? Blake Griffin out indefinitely with an injury. Probably won't be back until late November. Hopefully we can get him back earlier than that. But we watched them play the first 2 games. What's the prospects for the season so far?
I mean, we already knew we had a good player in Luke Kennard, at least a semi-decent player. But
he's been fantastic.
Yeah, based on what we've seen so far, he's really looking like he could be one of those big pieces for the Pistons for years to come. Obviously, the Pistons... lost their second game to the Hawks, but you have to remember that we don't even have our star Blake Griffin back yet.
But the Hawks might be sneaky good this year,
too. Oh, I think they are. They're an impressive team if you look at the young talent that they have. Maybe not this year, perhaps, but we're going to see flashes this year from them, and then in the future I think they're going to be really good. But going back to the Pistons, we still haven't seen Blake Griffin. And then Andre Drummond, as much as...
Contract year Dre.
As much as we've dogged on him for being that, you know, big man who's kind of not...
Who refuses to develop.
Right, he don't really want in the league anymore. The dude is producing. I think he had 30 points, 23 rebounds first game of the season, which is just downright impressive numbers. And I don't think anyone's going to expect him to keep that up for the whole season. But if he can even put up half as many rebounds and, you know, 20 points a game, Pistons are going to be looking in good shape. So
he's going to have to carry the workload, him and Kennard. And D-Rose off the bench, especially with how Reggie Jackson. I'm going to shift the focus. Andre Drummond, you've averted my gaze for the time being because you've played really well. Reggie Jackson, you are terrible.
He's not good.
You are so bad. He is actively stealing money from the Pistons. I saw him take two consecutive step-back threes in the first 3 minutes of the game, both of which not even in the same zip code as the rim. So it... Oh, God. I've had quite enough of him already, and we're two games into the season. I can't watch him for a full year.
I love Derrick Rose. I was.
I'm becoming more and more of a Derrick Rose fan as we go just because I'm tired of seeing Reggie Jackson touch the basketball.
I was so happy when the Pistons picked him up. That made my absolute week when that happened. That was a wonderful pickup.
He looks really good.
Right, not even because Derrick Rose is awesome and not even because Reggie Jackson is a bum, but also because Reggie Jackson gets injured for like half the season. Usually.
Yeah, he also left the game yesterday with lower back tightness.
Right.
So mysterious injury after, like I said, actively stealing money from the Pistons.
Expect a lot of lower back tightnesses from Reggie Jackson and a lot more D-Rose. He doesn't have the same explosiveness that he did before his knee injuries, but he can still make a lot of great moves. I don't know if you saw his crossover on Malcolm Brogdon.
Oh, baby.
That was elite.
Vintage.
That was vintage D-Rose, and I'm excited to see what he's going to provide for the Pistons moving forward.
I want to shift gears a little bit to Major League Baseball and the World Series, the October Classic, if you will, Astros versus Nationals.
It's the best time of the year for sports.
It really is. It's wonderful. We have the World Series, NFL is in full swing, NBA, NHL both starting up. I mean, what a time to be alive. It truly is. It's fantastic. But has this World Series really been what we've expected? Because
no.
I think the Astros, pretty much everybody, nobody thought that the Nationals would be able to touch Garrett Cole or Justin Verlander. I know Greinke hasn't pitched all that well, but you know he's included in that rotation. And they have looked, the Nationals have looked downright dominant in the first two games. And you know if they take a commanding 3-0 lead, then it's going to be pretty much lights out on the series. So obviously big things coming in this series. If the Astros can win this, if the Astros can get back to Houston, I think they will have a chance in the series, even if it's 3-1. If they can get back to Houston, they're a good enough ball club, and they have good enough pitching where they can make a run at this thing. But if they, I tell you what, even if the Nationals win the first game in Washington D.C. and go up 3-0, I think it's over because the Nationals just are the hot ball club, and we've seen this in the past. We're the hot ball club at the right time. You don't necessarily have to be the better team if you are hot at that time. Then you're going to have a good chance to win the World Series.
Yeah, it's
going to
be tough for the Astros coming up in the next couple games. And, you know, everyone is taking a look at that 12-3, I believe, was the score of Game 2 where the Nationals just took over at the end and blew them out. Everyone's looking at that game as, you know, proof that the Nationals are truly dominating over the Astros. But to me, Game 1 was more impressive. Astros, you know, had just played a couple games before and enough time or a couple days before and enough time where they've gotten a little bit of a rest, but they're still hot. They're still ready to go. The Nationals, what did they have, a week or two off? They hadn't played.
Yeah, they swept. They swept in the ALCS, so or the NLCS.
They hadn't played in, you know, at least a solid week. And usually when that happens, you're going to have some cold at-bats, cold.
Especially when you're playing against a guy like Garrett Cole who hasn't lost a game since May.
Exactly. And they responded very well, obviously, winning that game. So if they can do that with all that layoff time, it's going to be scary for the Astros moving forward. I'm still pulling for the Astros. I'm not even going to try to hide my bias. I told you before on the show I really want that mattress guy to win all of his money that he bet.
Oh, yes.
And really, when you come down to it, that's what matters in sports, you know, things like that. So that's why I'm pulling for the Astros.
And like I said, I don't think it's over right now, but, you know, it just...
If you got your ace JV struggling, though, that's an issue.
He's not their ace. He's their second best pitcher, but I understand the point. And
you
right
know what?
Now,
he's an ace in my heart, okay? As a Tigers fan, so...
I don't think it's over, but, you know, basically... Basic sports knowledge tells you that if you go down 3-0 in a 7-game series, it's basically lights out. So
tell that to the Cavs.
This next one's a must-win for the Astros. We got big things coming. Second segment, NFL talk, NCAA football, your This Week in History with Brennan Bevins, all that on the other side of the break. Stick around. Ah. We are back again, and it is time for our weekly segment, This Week in History, with your boy Brennan Bevins. Take it away.
All right, so this week in history, we'll be traveling back to the pleasant time of 1920, where Alexander I, the great king of Greece, died after being bit by his pet monkey. That is as tragic as it comes, Nate. That's short and sweet for this week in history, but really ending it on a bitter note for poor Alexander.
This is getting stupider by the week, I swear to God. I like that you find the funny things, but I swear every single week in history something dumber happens. And for that, we're thankful.
Could you really just imagine being the guy who died because of his pet monkey biting him?
Oh, you'd go down in history, and obviously he did.
Yeah, that's...
Did he do anything worthwhile other than that? Do you have any idea?
Probably not. I don't know why we don't learn more about that in history classes in high school.
That's what I'm telling you. That's way more valuable than what they do teach us.
That's what we need to be learning.
Let's talk about the National Football League. What do you say? You on board?
I'd love to.
The Patriots of New England, in case you ever
Patriots?
Yeah, those Patriots. Okay. The ones of New England. The ones with Bill Belichick and Thomas Brady. And, they got Mohamed Sanu of the Atlanta Falcons. The Atlanta Falcons are a dumpster fire, 1-6 this year, and they're clearly looking to deal some of their veteran players, and Mohamed Sanu would fall under that category. Their receiving core has been just a roller coaster ride from the very beginning, talking about the Patriots, of course, with Antonio Brown coming in, Josh Gordon coming in now on injured
Demaryius
reserve.
Demaryius Thomas they had.
Demaryius Thomas being dealt. Julian Edelman has been pretty much the only stable point this year, and now they have a guy, Mohamed Sanu, who has been a proven asset in this league. And the rich just keep getting richer.
Question, what happened to Chris Hogan? I feel like that man just fell off the face of the earth.
Let me Google that, because I actually do want to know that.
He was pretty good last year, and obviously he was good the year before. So.
All of these, I feel like half of these white receivers that the Patriots randomly obtained, they have no shelf life other than Julian Edelman. Even Wes Welker was kind of here and then gone. So
Chris Hogan was literally the stereotypical Patriot. He was literally a lacrosse player at Penn State. He did not even play football. And Bill Belichick said, yeah, okay, let's see what we can do with this guy. And, of course, Tom Brady ends up making him into a star.
Yeah, so here's the deal. He plays for the Carolina Panthers. He's currently on injured reserve, but I promise you he is not half the player that he was when he was with the Patriots.
No.
Just because that's how it is.
I'm curious to see how this works out with Mohamed Sanu.
Is there a quarterback controversy in New England? Mohamed Sanu can sling it.
That is true. He does have a nice cannon for an arm. I know
a nuke, if you will.
Yeah, the Falcons have run some trick plays with that man. Honestly, if Mohamed Sanu is a guy who's kind of flown a little bit under the radar. He's probably the third best in the trio receivers with the Falcons, with Calvin Ridley and then obviously Julio Jones. I personally like Mohamed Sanu. I usually always pick him in my fantasy leagues, and with one of those last picks, he just has a guy that to me has a lot of potential, and I think with the Patriots, he's going to really thrive.
In the Patriots, we're not used to seeing these kinds of storylines mid-season, but we're seeing a few storylines that we are just not accustomed to seeing right now.
Michael Bennett,
yeah, obviously a bit of a loose cannon throughout his career, and. The Patriots acquiring him. And Tom Brady, we've seen the age start to play a factor a bit. We talked in a couple podcasts ago about Tom Brady taking a bunch of practices off, basically blaming age himself, which is something that's unheard of coming out of his mouth. And now we have this story, Adam Schefter going on, I believe it was Get Up on ESPN, and essentially saying that he thinks the least likely scenario for this coming offseason will be Tom Brady staying in a New England Patriots jersey. He said it's more likely that he's either going to retire or go elsewhere, which is actually shocking to me. I can't believe that. I know he's old, but when a guy like that is given as much as he's given to that franchise, it's pretty incredible to think about.
It just seems Tom Brady leaving the Patriots would be like Kobe leaving the Lakers or Dirk leaving the Mavericks. It just doesn't feel right. Can you honestly picture him in a different
team? No, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
I'm trying to imagine Tom Brady in another team's uniform, and it just doesn't make sense. It's not right. I really hope Tom doesn't go through with this. This is my personal opinion. But I guess the next question that really arises from this talk is, do you think this is going to help or hurt Tom Brady's legacy if he chooses to do this? Like, is there more upside in this or downside?
I think they could do nothing but hurt, to be honest with you.
You think so?
I think when you think about it, the deck is going to be stacked against him, considering that he's going to be going to a lesser franchise because there's just nothing that matches up to the Patriots. He's going to be going in the twilight years of his career. He's going to be past his prime. He's setting himself up for failure. And then inevitably, when he doesn't succeed, you're always going to have that thing hanging over his legacy. Oh, look, even in the tail or the twilight of his career, he could not get it done with another team. And there have been people, you know, speculating for the longest time that he's a bit of a system quarterback, you know, doing everything that Bill Belichick tells him to do, which is fine. He's a fine player, but he's just not anything special. And then there's people saying that if you plugged in another quarterback into that system, you know, they would have equal success or something close to it.
No, so yeah, that's the thing. I think that I agree with you because I think that no matter what people say about Tom Brady being a system quarterback, if he retires this season or relatively soon, he's still going to go down as the best to ever do it.
You can't do that type of winning and not get some credit for
right.
it. So,
but
I don't want to. I'm of the opinion that sure, I do think the New England Patriots system has a big part of what Brady has become. I don't think he would be the quarterback that he is today without Belichick's tutelage or anything like that. But you know, on the flip side, the guy's won six rings now. He's won six rings, so that's kind of hard to dispute.
Just to play devil's advocate, if he were to leave and then played excellently with really any team that he went to, there'd be no dispute as to whether or not this guy is the best football player of all time.
Can I take?
Because the biggest knock on Tom Brady is that he is a system quarterback. He's just thriving off of Belichick and Robert Kraft. And if he were able to go to a different place and still succeed at, 42, 43 years old, I mean, what the heck are we even doing here?
Can I take this even a step further and say that what if Tom Brady goes somewhere else and plays relatively well, but they don't win anything? Then what are you going to say about a 6 Super Bowl rings? Because even though he played well, he's not winning anything, which tells you right there that probably a lot of his winning has to be has to do with Bill Belichick and the system.
I mean, I feel like this would not fly with a lot of the haters, but I think this is actually a fair take. I think you can chalk it up to this point look, the guy's 42 years old, and he's playing with a team that he's never played with before. So if he plays really well and the team, isn't thriving, like, cut the dude some slack. What is he really supposed to do at that point? It's not like he's trying to rebuild and, make a new name for himself at this point. It's see how long I can keep playing football until my body literally tells me I have to stop.
Yeah, I just think this would be the dumbest move
of all time.
And Tom Brady,
dude, should stay with the Patriots.
Yeah, he needs to stay with the Patriots. There's very few guys who get to say they started and ended their career with the same team and have that level of success.
Okay, so if he does leave, though, where's the most likely scenario, are you thinking?
I have not one clue. Like I said, I cannot even picture in my head Tom Brady wearing another team's jersey. And I don't even know if Adam Schefter has come up with any concrete evidence of where he would go. So I'm not going to be the one to come out and name names. The Detroit Lions, maybe?
Honestly, you know what? I want Stafford.
No, I'm a big Matt Stafford guy. Everybody saw what his wife came out and said on Instagram today about, him wanting more than the fans want. To win a ring with the Lions and to do it in this city, and he has no interest in going anywhere else. I believe she said something to the tune of, "You're gonna have to carry him out of here if he's not gonna leave on his own." So that's what my quarterback says. I love my quarterback.
No, but speaking of the NFC North and Tom Brady, I've heard some rumors. Well, actually, it's complete speculation, not even rumors. I've heard speculation that kind of scares me. And it's what if Tom Brady went to the Bears? Because that is actually a realistic scenario.
I want
scenario.
No part of that.
I mean, think about it. Mitch Trubisky is not not doing the job, so to speak, over there in Chicago.
He's terrible.
And honestly, that is a fit that could work because it's a very good team if you think about
it. It's a good organization, just not the Patriots.
It's a good defense. They've got good pieces around Mitch Trubisky. It's just Mitch Trubisky is not really getting the job done. So I think that could be a potential destination for Brady if he were to leave.
Yeah, I want to say also that I hate being one to point out my own mistakes, but I kind of want to take credit for how Kirk Cousins is presently playing.
Oh my gosh.
He has been.
What the heck?
He has set the world on fire since I told him he was a bum approximately 3 weeks ago.
I said it too, though. So it's
yeah, funny. I think we're both kind of taking the L on that one right now because he has been.
Lights out.
He has been lights out. He has been putting up actually Patrick Mahomes-esque numbers. I heard that on the Will Cain show today. He's been putting up Patrick Mahomes-esque numbers in the past 3 or 4 weeks, which pains me to say because my take is almost officially wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tragic.
Brennan, tomorrow's the day. Tomorrow is the day. Michigan-Notre Dame. Your boys in the blue are going to play the Catholics from South Bend, and we're going to be there in the big house as a part of 115,000 people watching one of the greatest rivalries in all of sports. And it is going to be beautiful, and it is going to be a sight to behold.
Really? You're saying that that's going to be beautiful?
Brennan, it's football, and there's 115,000 people. I can't not enjoy myself.
Michigan fans, Nate.
But I am going to be wearing Central Michigan gear tomorrow. I've already told you that.
We're trying to get in the student section, Nate. You can't do that.
And I'm going to do it, and I'm going to love doing it. And I will not put on that gaudy blue color. It won't happen.
Fine, you can wear maize. That's fine.
It won't happen. No, none of that will be the case. Yeah, we'll be there. Your boys will be there. We will try to send you as many updates as possible. It's going to be a good time, and we're going to have a lot of fun for sure.
And we're going to have even more fun because Michigan's going to win, beating the Fighting Chickens out of Notre Dame. It's going
to
be really good.
Well, just think of that one. Good job.
No, that's probably a well-documented fact that Notre Dame tried to back out of the series. Michigan was having none of it. We got him right back in there. We're going to go back to kicking some butt.
I don't even know why you have this on the show sheet. You have who wins. And
okay.
Okay. I don't even want to hear your opinion
Listen
on this
to
one because I know
the
answer.
This is not my take. This is a one Mr. Kirk Herbstreit's take. Michigan played their best football in the second half against Penn State. Best football of the season. They lost the game. I hate it. I'm not trying to say it was
And their season's over.
Right. I'm not trying to say it's – a lot of Michigan fans are saying, you know, I feel really good about that Penn State game. Look, I don't feel good about it.
Moral victories, Brennan, moral victories.
I'm not on that train, but I am saying, look, Michigan played like a team who could win in that game. And that is more than we can say for a lot of their wins, which is ironic –
A
lot of Michigan's wins, they did not play like a team that wanted to or could win that game. It's just that they were playing such inferior talent that they were able to pull out the victory.
Do you consider this game a must-win game?
This Notre Dame game?
For the sake of Jim Harbaugh, if nothing else, do you consider this game a must-win game?
No, and here's why. I think that he has already gotten so much flack from both Michigan fans and the outside world combined that regardless, the narrative isn't going to change on him. I will say, however, that if he loses this game and then also loses against Ohio State, then we're talking about a must-win type game going into that Ohio State game. So you see what I'm saying? If he loses this game, going into that game against Ohio State, that would, I think...
I mean, that game should be a must-win no matter what.
I agree. As a Michigan coach.
Yeah, absolutely.
Regardless of how you're doing that season, that's a game you circle every year.
We have keys to the game, but nobody really wants to talk about that. I want to talk about your opinion about the Colin Cowherd take. I know you have a bit of a beef with Colin Cowherd, and I don't know if this take will make you more or less of a fan of him. Do you know what I'm getting at here?
Do
you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
For all the folks at home who don't know what I'm talking about, Colin Cowherd essentially came out and said that, and Joel Klatt also.
Yeah, a respected analyst.
A respected analyst that Brennan has a man crush on.
I do.
Of Fox Sports, of course. They basically both came out and said that the Jim Harbaugh era at Michigan has not at all been a disappointment, actually, considering the fact that he has essentially led their program to what their program has been over the course of their history. And Colin Cowherd essentially came out and said that he did not consider them an upper echelon program, but a program that, you know, consistently wins 9-10 games a year. They're a good program. Some would even call a great program, but they are not an elite program, and they do not get the talent nor should they get the love of a program like Ohio State and Alabama, you know, the traditional blue bloods.
No, there's certain validity to what those two were saying.
I think there's a lot of validity to what they were saying, as a matter of fact.
What I agree with them in is that Michigan while they do have 11 national championships, most of those national championships did come before 1940. And other than that, they've won one in 1999 and I believe maybe one in the late 40s. Other than that, they – or 1997, excuse me, and then the late 1940s. Other than that, they haven't won a national championship. Where I disagree is that Joel Klatten Colin Cowherd made the claim that Bo Schembechler and Lloyd Carr, you know, are winning at the same clip or won at the same clip that Jim Harbaugh is winning at now. And I don't really think that's comparable because they were also playing two or three less games than Jim Harbaugh is playing. So while they were only winning, you know, 9-10 games a year, they were also only playing, you know, 10 or 11 games a year at most. Jim Harbaugh is getting, you know, anywhere from 12 to 14 games a year. And then another area in which I disagree is while Bo Schembechler and Lloyd Carr maybe weren't winning national championships, they were winning Big Ten championships, particularly Bo, winning them in large numbers, you know, always competing. Jim Harbaugh has done a good job staying in the pack of competing, but can never seem to finish. And both Lloyd Carr and Bo Schembechler were able to win big games at least a decent clip. Jim Harbaugh has not been able to do it. He's only won that 2016 game against Wisconsin. I mean, this Notre Dame game, in all intents and purposes, even though the season looks like it's over, is a big game. So maybe he can start to change the narrative this week. But that's where I stand on the Joel Klatt take. There's some points in there that were valid, but as a whole, it doesn't fully fit the narrative.
You got that off your chest now. Yeah. Very good.
Yeah.
All right, breathe. One, two, three, breathe. Let's shift the topic before your blood pressure spikes again. LSU is absolutely elite, and they are an elite program.
I didn't see this one coming. I'm not going to lie.
I wonder if Joel Klatt and Colin Cowherd would put LSU on their upper echelon of programs because they have looked absolutely fantastic. Joe Burrow, who was not even on anybody's Heisman radar coming into the year, has lit the world on fire. And the funniest moment of the sports weekend that we've probably seen.
A Heisman moment.
Yeah, a Heisman moment. That is something that I wish that they would change the Heisman Trophy from the current pose into Joe Burrow with his pants pulled down.
But on live television. And not only on live television, but multiple replays.
Multiple replays, Twitter, Instagram, the whole nine, everything that's happened. But with Joe Burrow, all jokes aside, he's played fantastic. Do you think LSU makes the playoffs? Because I personally do. They've looked absolutely tremendous. I think the SEC, with Georgia losing an unexpected game to South Carolina, I absolutely do think that LSU has a very good chance. I believe they're in Tuscaloosa this week, so we'll get a look at that. But I think LSU will, at the end of the day, be in the college football playoff.
I tell you what, I think that LSU is certainly a playoff team. I think it's going to be hard for the SEC to get two teams in again. I think that there was a lot of uproar when Alabama and Georgia both made it, even though they played each other in the national championship. And it certainly is possible for LSU and Alabama to get into the playoffs.
Well, here's the problem. LSU and Alabama are both in the SEC West. So
they're going to play each other.
They're going to play each other, and one of the teams will be in the SEC championship game, and the other one will not.
So I struggle to see both of those teams making the playoffs, and it's hard to say that Alabama is not going to make the playoff. So I think it is really going to boil down to that Alabama-LSU game that happens. I believe if it's not this month, it's early November when that game takes place. That's going to be an awesome game. I will certainly be tuned in, and it has huge, huge playoff implications. Maybe it can begin the teardown of the Alabama dynasty. That would be awesome for me personally, but we'll see.
Yeah, that will just never happen. that will never happen in my lifetime, I feel like, at this point. I know it will, but it doesn't feel like it at this present moment. You want to pick some games? You want to do this right now?
I'd love to.
Pick some games, get this out of the way, get all you folks tucked into bed, wrapped up out of here, because I want to go to bed. I'm tired. We lots of stuff going on tomorrow. Big day. Huge day, some might even say. So let's get a couple of picks out of the way right now. Ohio State, Wisconsin, number 3 Ohio State, number 13 Wisconsin. Who do you have in that one? Coming off a big loss to Illinois. A huge loss. A bit of a trap game in that regard. Illinois stunned the Badgers in Champaign. Nobody saw that coming. Perhaps looking forward at this Ohio State game. So who do you got in this one?
I mean, I just think that Wisconsin's going to still be kind of with that letdown. And not to mention that Ohio State is an elite team, so I think Ohio State's going to win by two scores at least.
Yeah, I don't know about two scores, but I feel like Ohio State is certainly the better team, and you know it'll be up to Paul Chris and that coaching staff to get to right the ship and to tell everybody, you know, at Wisconsin that hey, we're still relevant in the playoff discussion, and you know we're gonna go into Columbus. Are they at Columbus?
Yep.
Yeah, they are at Columbus. They will be going into Columbus and getting a huge road victory that will go a long way in the playoff committee's mm-hmm. eyes. Let's go number 9, Auburn versus number 2, LSU. So apparently I misspoke because I said they played Alabama. Number 9, Auburn versus number 2, LSU.
No, we said it was in the future, the Alabama game. But, I mean, you don't want LSU to be looking forward. I don't know how you look past the number 9 team in the country.
Yeah.
But when you do have play an opponent like Alabama in the coming weeks, I guess you could start to overlook Auburn. Personally, I don't think Auburn is a number 9 team in the nation. I think that they're a solid team, you know, a potentially top 15 team, but number 9 seems high to me. I don't think it's going to be all that close. I think LSU is going to win that one pretty soundly as well.
Really?
Yeah, I do.
I think Auburn's going to hang tough. I really do. I think Auburn is going to hang into that game. I don't think that's going to be a walkover game for LSU. I think that will come down. That will be a field goal game at the end of it. If you're looking for my humble opinion.
Tell you what, that Penn State-Michigan State game has always been an intriguing one to me just because Michigan State has, regardless of how good Penn State has been, Michigan State has had Penn State's number in the past couple of years.
You want to pick that one?
I mean, I'm going to go with Penn State, but I think it's going to be a lot closer than the spreads may show simply because, like I said, it's a hump that Penn State has to get over. They've been struggling with Michigan State, and it's at Michigan State with a stingy defense. Horrible offense, but
yeah, I'll take Penn State. Michigan State's offense is not going to score enough points.
I think it's just going to be closer.
Just the name of the game in East Lansing nowadays.
We'll see.
Central Michigan at Buffalo. Let's pick this game really quick. Yes. Central Michigan controls their own destiny in the MAC West.
You love to hear those words. Words that make me just absolutely cry with joy.
Yeah, words that make me happy to be a CMU Chippewa. CMU, I believe, 4-point dogs on the road. Against a good Buffalo program. CMU, can they get it done in Buffalo?
Absolutely. Are you kidding me? Central could legitimately run the table from this point out.
Oh, they could. The MAC's wide open.
I think that begins tomorrow in Buffalo at 3:30.
A lot of injuries.
That's true, and I think that it would be remiss of us to not mention what Jay Billis said about David Moore.
Oh, I think it would be remiss. Would you care to tell the people about that?
I'd love to. Jay Billis, the renowned basketball analyst.
And renowned NCAA, you know, hater.
Yes, he truly is. He came out and, in a shocking turn of events, defended a little-known, to the outside world, of course, Central Michigan quarterback David Moore, who got suspended earlier this year for performance-enhancing drugs. According to, you know, his own sources, that David Moore's, that is, he did not have any knowledge that, you know, substances he was taking were illegal. And then, according to this Jay Billis tweet, David Moore, the second time through the test, came up negative. So, you know, clean. So he's completely clean. So there's a lot of controversy. Jay Billis was sounding off about it, how, you know, the NCAA treats the players like garbage, all that, yada, yada. It was just great to see some positive publicity for Central Michigan's players.
And for David Moore, who's been through quite a bit after playing, you know, getting the starting job, playing so well, and then having, you know, his season taken away from him. I've got Central Michigan on the road. A lot of injuries for key players, especially on the defensive side, but you know, I want that game so badly, and I know they do too. Jim McElwain will have the boys ready to play.
Oh, absolutely. No question.
You've got UCF and Temple highlighted. You want to talk about this game? Go ahead.
I just think it's going to be an awesome game. Unfortunately, it's not at the Bounce House. That would be awesome. But Temple is one of those teams that has been on the rise in the past couple of years, and they look like they're not showing any signs of slowing down this coming year. UCF, on the other side, is one of those teams that's been on a little bit of a decline this past season. I think it's going to be a really good game. Gut check time for UCF, but I got Temple in this one, I think, actually.
Is that enough picks for you?
Yeah, that'll do. Well, what about Wazoo? Come on.
You want to talk about Wazoo?
We got to talk about Wazoo.
Yeah, Wazoo's been kind of terrible. They play number 11 Oregon at Autzen Stadium.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to take Oregon.
Pac-12 after dark, Beth Mullins. Shout out Hunter. I love that.
I am going to take Oregon in a healthy win.
You know, that seems like a trap game for Oregon. The Pac-12 is an absolute mess. It is a mess.
It's a crapshoot.
It's a real crapshoot. I'm going to pick Oregon to win it by less than 6.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. Yes. Very good.
There you go.
Time for your favorite segment to end the show. Who's your daddy of the week? You don't even have one written down. You have one in that big, beautiful brain of yours?
I got one in the old melon.
What do you got for me?
I'm going to say, you know, I had to do it to him. You heard it on the music, on the intro and the outro. Well, you're going to hear it on the outro, but...
I can't take this. I know where this is going.
Jesus is King is the devil's daddy this week.
For all of you that don't know, Jesus is King. We have a bit of an older audience in some facets of our demographic. So, Jesus is King, Kanye West's latest album. Brennan claims to be one of the greatest albums of all time already.
Look, okay, for the demographic that doesn't know Kanye West... as well as they should. Kanye West, of course, for your perspective, maybe, you know, a crass artist who just, you know, sprouts profanities and all that. But I encourage everyone to listen to this album. Beautiful music, Christian music, great songs. It's the whole nine yards. Give it a listen. You won't regret it. That's all I have to say about that.
And I have one written down, but I'm going to change it. I'm going to call an audible at the last minute here.
Wow.
And I am going to say, because of your inspiring speech about Jay Billis, Jay Billis is the NCAA's daddy, and I hope that plays out as such and that David Moore gets reinstated for Central Michigan University.
Amen to that.
Amen, brother. We will be in Ann Arbor tomorrow. Lots of stuff going on this weekend. Lions, we didn't talk about them much. Hopefully we can right the ship this Sunday so that I can go into the new week happy, and I hope you would do the same. This has been the Trial Run Podcast, and I'm happy to be back.
God bless America.